This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. President Trump has taken up a great deal of the nation's attention since his ride down the escalator at Trump Tower to announce his presidential bid in 2015. Today, 1 week ahead of Election Day 2020, we will present two different perspectives on the president, both from his own party. We'll start with former Lieutenant Governor John Mutz, who served with Governor Robert Orr from 1981 to 1989. He wrote an opinion piece in the September 25th edition of the Indianapolis Business Journal entitled, "I'm Still a Proud Republican, but we must defeat Trump." John Mutz, welcome.
Thanks, Matt. Glad to be with you.
And we will hear from the other side of Indiana's Republican Party later in the show. We'll be joined by former Indiana Secretary of State Ed Simcox in the next segment. If you have questions or comments for either John Mutz or Ed Simcox, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. And you can also leave us a voicemail. You can call us at 866-476-3881, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation today. Again, that's 866-476-3881. You can also send us a high-quality voice message with our smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. It's free, and it's very easy to use. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. So, John Mutz, I want to start by asking about your initial thoughts on Donald Trump back in 2015 when he announced his candidacy, and of course, then through the campaign for the 2016 election. As a Republican, how did your thoughts on candidate Trump evolve?
I could start by saying that when I first learned that he was going to be a candidate, that I thought about him with some skepticism. The only way I knew him in the past was through his role as a reality star on a TV series. I didn't find that as a great recommendation for the president of the United States. Some of my Republican friends quickly reminded me that Ronald Reagan had been an actor before he became a politician. I would point out, of course, that he also was governor of California before, and also did a series of lectures for General Electric on political philosophy before he actually ran. The second thing is that I then had a chance to meet Donald Trump well before his campaign. He came to Indianapolis, Indiana, to solicit the gambling franchise for French Lick, Indiana. He represented one of four different groups vying for that particular right to run a gambling casino. It turned out that he was rejected because he applied for the license in a corporation that had been through bankruptcy, and that's against Indiana law. So he didn't get it, and it went to another group. I also came across Donald Trump as a director of a company here in Indianapolis, which was an insurance holding company called Conseco. But we had a joint venture with Donald Trump in New York City. We jointly owned the GM building in downtown Manhattan. Settling that matter with Donald Trump was a very difficult chore. And again, he did not impress me as the kind of person who had the qualities that we seek normally in the president.
Now, let me get into his presidency, though. So throughout the last 4 years, what have you seen from Donald Trump that's concerned you the most?
Okay, well, I'll quickly tick off a few. The first one is his insistence that the press is the enemy of the people. The press, of course, is featured in the Constitution of the United States, has always been considered the so-called fourth estate, an essential part of the function of watching what government does to us or for us. So that bothers me. Most politicians seek to encourage the press to cover them fairly and honestly. Donald Trump just creates an animosity with them. I have found him to be engaged in a number of situations of self-dealing and corruptive behavior, which bother me. I'm concerned about how he has conducted foreign affairs for the United States, generally picking fights with our most trusted allies that have been with us through thick and thin since the Second World War. I also find him taking the United States out of foreign organizations, which I think have a good opportunity to solve international problems. In other words, he's turning his back on the rest of the world, and that bothers me. He has been unwilling to say that if he loses, he will peaceably transfer power to his opponent. And of course, that's one of the hallmarks of the U.S. system, and I hope that does not happen.
Now, your column, I want to move on to some of the responses to your column, which got plenty of support from readers of the IBJ, but also plenty of backlash. And we'll hear from Ed Simcox in the next segment. He, of course, along with three former state GOP chairmen, wrote a response to your piece. But I want to put some of those other critical responses in front of you and give you a chance to answer. So one of them came from a reader named Ryan, who wrote, "No good Republican could even consider a vote for the Green New Deal and the far left platform." And this is a parenthetical, or a lack thereof, of a Biden presidency. So, John, when it comes to the issues, Ryan has a point. Once Biden got the nomination, he did stay to the left on environmental policy. I want your comment on that.
Well, my comment would be that we definitely need to have a plan for action concerning global warming. That's an essential ingredient, should come from the president. And as I pointed out, this year's Republican convention didn't even adopt a platform. And so far, Trump has been unable to present publicly a health care plan to replace Obamacare, which he wants to see repealed. And in the same way, he doesn't have a plan for dealing with the coronavirus in the United States. And that's kind of typical in this situation. Now, there is very little likelihood that the major elements of the Green New Deal could be passed, even if Joe Biden wins, and even if both houses are Democratic in makeup. And I say for that because there's so many other issues that would be necessarily dealt with before such a program could be put in place. So, sure, I understand those who say, well, don't vote for Biden because you don't know what he's going to do. I guess what I'd say is that Joe Biden is a middle-of-the-road Democrat, a little bit to the left, perhaps, but certainly not a radical Democrat.
A reader named Keith responded to your column, and this is a quote, "I assume you care about things like originalist judicial appointees, Second Amendment rights, fair trade deals, and pro-life policies, because Republicans have been campaigning on those things for decades. Well, Trump has delivered on those things. He's even flipped the Ninth Circuit." Of course, Keith meant the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals out west. Keith is sort of getting at the actions of this presidency that have gone perhaps less noticed among its opponents. How do you respond to that?
Well, I would respond that the changes in the makeup of the court system, many of them are quite welcome. They bring a kind of balance to the appeals courts. And now we have an overbalance to the conservative side on the Supreme Court. But I don't even object to that, because I guess I think the jurists will, in fact, invoke the kind of a hands-off approach, using their own ideas and make their decisions based on what the statutes and the law say. So I'd have to give him some points for some of the additional members of the courts. But I think it's gone far enough.
A number of the responses to your column contain the acronym RINO, for Republican in name only. It's a common buzz phrase right now. They're saying that you're betraying the party, or perhaps maybe a softer way to put it is that the party isn't the same now as it was when you were in office. Do you feel that way?
Yes, I definitely feel that way. When I was in office, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party learned how, on many occasions, to work together to solve problems, to pass legislation. some of my most important colleagues in the Indiana Senate were Democrats. Some of my most ardent supporters when I was lieutenant governor and who supported my economic development program, they were Democrats. And it seems to me that's the way it should be. This president does not seem to have the knack of working across the aisle. I would have to say to you that our former senator from the state of Indiana, Richard Lugar, who passed away last year, did have the knack of working across the aisle. He was a Republican, and on occasion, he worked with Joe Biden.
A reader named Tom, and we've got just a couple minutes left in this segment, but I'll spend part of the next segment with you. Tom responded directly to your statement about the president. I'm quoting here, quoting your column here, the president having virtually destroyed our traditional network of allies. So Tom wrote, Trump did take a strong position and as a result was able to get the other members of NATO to begin to honor their financial obligations, which they had not been doing. So what Tom is referring to, of course, is the deal struck late last year ahead of NATO's 70th anniversary summit in London. Is Trump destroying the network of allies, or is he just reshaping it to take some of the burden off the U.S.?
Well, it depends on your viewpoint, but my viewpoint has been ever since the Second World War that the United States is the recognized leader of the free world. And I hope that we can maintain that leadership. The kind of relationships that he has promoted with our allies, he's treated them like the opponents. He's treated those like those who oppose us in international relations. And in many cases, he has made relationships or talked about relationships with Vladimir Putin and with the ruler of North Korea, which I do not think are in the best interest of the United States.
John Mutz is a former lieutenant governor of Indiana. His column, I'm Still a Proud Republican, But We Must Defeat Trump, appeared in the September 25th edition of the Indianapolis Business Journal. We will have John Mutz back for a couple of minutes in the next segment. Also up next, we will hear from former Indiana Secretary of State Ed Simcox, who joins us to talk about his pro-Trump response to John Mutz's piece. If you have questions or comments for the discussion today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881, or you can send us a high-quality audio message through our All In Vox Pop app. I'm Matt Pelser, and we will be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about the complicated relationship between some Indiana Republicans and the president. Of course, many still support him, but some, like former Lieutenant Governor John Mutz, who we just heard from, strongly oppose his reelection. We will be welcoming the other side momentarily. But before we do, I want to spend just a couple more minutes with John Mutz. So, John, we're going to have you back later in the show to talk with Ed Simcox. But before we bring him in with his opposing viewpoint, assuming you get what you want and Donald Trump is voted out of office, what will you be watching for from a Joe Biden presidency? How will you take him to task?
Well, of course, I will be looking, first of all, at how we reorganize the Republican Party, because a Trump loss will be, I think, a tremendous change in the party. Trump is the party as it stands right now, and that bothers me a lot. So that's the first thing. The Lincoln Republicans, which is a separate group of people who put together a PAC and who are opposing Trump's reelection, they are all Republican strategists and campaign managers in the past, would be an ideal place to start that think tank for the future of the Republican Party. I guess that would be my action. In the case of Joe Biden, I'd be looking for the kinds of promises he has made, and he's made a number of them. And I would suspect he may want to spend more money than I would if I were in charge. But Joe Biden is pretty much of a moderate when it comes to that kind of change. That's my comment.
All right. John Mutz is a former lieutenant governor of Indiana, and his column, "I'm Still a Proud Republican, But We Must Defeat Trump," appeared in the September 25th edition of the IBJ, the Indianapolis Business Journal. John Mutz, we will have you back in about 20 minutes, but thanks for this one-on-one time. And right now, I'd like to bring in one of the respondents to John Mutz's piece. John, if you wouldn't mind muting, and Ed Simcox, if you wouldn't mind unmuting from the call. Ed Simcox is a former Indiana Secretary of State, and he penned a response entitled, "Republicans Take John Mutz to Task for Opposition to Trump." Ed Simcox, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
So I just want to get some general thoughts from you on John Mutz's viewpoint. He raises a lot of concerns about Trump's leadership. Do you think any of them are founded?
Well, I read John's piece in the Business Journal, and I was surprised, to say the least, on his take on the president. I take a very different view. By the way, I might say that John and I served together, he in the lieutenant governor's office and I in the secretary of state's office, for a number of years. We've worked together in the energy industry and in other formats. So this is not a disrespect for the person. I have great respect for the person. I have great differences with his views as relates to his article on Trump. You know, when I looked at his bullet points in his article, He says threatens the very existence of NATO. I disagree with that. I think that he, along the lines, Matt, that you read from someone who responded to John's article from the public, said that he made allies kind of pay their fair share. That's the way I would put it. The assertion that in John's article that repeatedly asserted that mail-in voting is fraudulent or insecure without evidence. I think there is evidence that there's great danger with mail-in voting. I served as chief election officer in Indiana for 8 years. I know something about election laws. I know about election day procedures. I know about early voting, absentee voting, recounts, all the rest. I've been in the middle of it, in the thick of it. The idea that mail-in voting should have been instituted here in Indiana, I disagree with. Without the legislature, and this is my caveat, without the legislature holding hearings, without considering the views of experts, simply by the wave of an executive order, by the wave of a pen of a governor, to institute it at this time, I think would be foolhardy, and I think would jeopardize ballot security issues in Indiana. Governor Holcomb agrees with me, obviously. The Secretary of State, Connie Lawson, the election officer for our state, agrees with me. They didn't do it. Another thing John said is that Trump refuses to assure the American people that he would accept the results of a, and I'm using John's language, a free and fair election. I don't believe that that's ever what the president said. The president is concerned about an election that may result in activities that would be not free and that would be unfair. He has always, when he has refused to say he'll accept the results of an election, it's not about a free or fair election, mind you. It's about an election that might be rigged. And so that's a huge distinction in that point to be made about his acceptance of an election result.
I want to put some challenges in front of you, just like I did John Mutz. And all of these have appeared in the Indianapolis Business Journal, which printed your response to John Mutz's column. The same day that that column went into print, we saw another piece critical of the president written by another Republican, in this case, former Marion County Prosecutor Scott Newman. In it, he writes, "A vote for Trump is an act of complicity, a vote to force feed this country a giant everlasting gobstopper of thoughtlessness, autocratic rule, inattention to global threats from notorious enemies, craven kowtowing of the most contemptible world dictators, utter failure to provide the most fundamental protections owed to our citizens regarding their health, and contempt for our Constitution's mechanism for protecting all of us from government overreach." There's a lot there to unpack, of course, and the rhetoric is very strong, to say the least. But how do you, and I know you read Scott Newman's statements, how do you respond to them?
Actually, I did not read Newman's statements. I think they're over the top. I think we live on two different planets. I don't know where he comes from in saying the things that he said. As respects John's statement is not filled with hyperbole. John's statement is written, in my view, from a rational standpoint. I don't agree. I guess I'd go so far as to say I don't think Newman's was. So I don't know quite how to respond to that. I mean, I have a very, very fundamental disagreement with what he's saying there. On all counts of the at least as to the portion that you just read.
I want to keep the conversation focused on Indiana, but John Mutz certainly isn't the first Republican to come out against Trump. There have been others, many of whom have risked or even thrown away their political careers by doing so. What would they have to gain by standing up to the president?
Well, I think people hold sincere beliefs one way or the other. I don't think this election is about Biden, by the way, and I think that is to the detriment of the American people. I'll say more about Biden later as to why I believe he's unfit to be president. But it's either you like Trump, you dislike him, you love him, or you hate him. That's what the election's about, obviously. That's obviously why we're on the program today. Matt, there are three personal issues that motivate me that don't show up in the polls, that aren't top of mind for a lot of Americans. One of them is. Well, actually, I'm sorry, two of the three are, but if I'd like to recite those quickly, if you give me a minute here.
Please.
One of them is Trump, President Trump is pro-life. And for many, many people, not always profiled in the media, not always headlined, but for many people, that is an issue. That is a line in the sand issue that is on their radar screen. They'll make a judgment about a candidate on that issue alone, perhaps as related to any other issues. I don't think John's in that camp. I don't want to put words in John's mouth in that regard, but I to some extent am. For me and millions of Americans, that's a big deal. It speaks to the fundamental principle of the worth of every individual. The new left, the Democratic Party, that's taken over the Democratic Party, by the way, and that I believe will run the party if Biden's elected, leaves no room for dissent. Not one dissenting voice is allowed in their platform, in their party apparatus. Abort up to the day of birth is now their standard. Something that would have been absolutely unthinkable a few years ago in America. The president speaks out against that. He disagrees with it, and I applaud him for that. Second issue, the Supreme Court. John was a bit tepid a moment ago, it seems to me, in giving credit for the Supreme Court. I've been in politics for 50 years. John's been in politics longer than I have. One of the reasons conservatives work to elect presidents of the United States, and I've worked in those campaigns going back to the Nixon campaign, is to put people on the Supreme Court who are originalists, to use today's language, and textualists, who won't act as unelected policymakers on the bench. Five previous Republican presidents have promised to do this, have said they were going to do it, and couldn't get it done. This president succeeded in not just appointing one, but three outstanding jurists to the court in 4 years. And this, for me, overshadows just about every other pro or con that I might associate with the president. It's an extraordinary accomplishment. It's one that will, I believe, will, when the record is written of his presidency, will go down as his greatest, very greatest accomplishment. And thirdly, and this one is way off the radar for most people, it is, however, mentioned by Trump in both debates. It is mentioned in his speeches. I've worked in prison ministry for 40 years. I've visited prisons around the world. I visited prisons in many states around this country, from Hawaii to the East Coast, as a 30-year member of the Board of Directors of Prison Fellowship Ministries. And I also chaired an organization called Justice Fellowship. We work for criminal justice reform. in the various states around the country, and we worked in the Congress. We Republicans and Democrats came together, liberals and conservatives, to enact reform like alternative incarceration, prison rape protections, funding for community corrections. I worked on the first funding for community corrections here under Bob Orr and John Mutz when I was Secretary of State. Trump puts criminal justice front and center as a policy goal. He did indeed work with Democrats on that. They got something done on it. He's proud of it. He went so far as to mention it in his State of the Union address, something I've never heard any other president mention in my memory. And it sticks out for me because it's a passion for me. It's something that I think is very important today with all the racial divide and all the talk about mass incarceration and all the rest. So that one for me is personal. That one for me elevates Trump in my mind and elevates the importance of his presidency and his reelection.
I want to come back to your comments about abortion, and it is a divisive issue. But there is criticism on the abortion conversation that it creates single issue voters, that no matter how contemptible the candidate might be, is if they're against abortion, they will be voted for. And that, of course, is an argument being made by opponents to the president. Do you think that that's dangerous, that there can be some single issues that a politician can pander to, even though they may be against values on their face, I suppose?
Well, that's a great question. I do think it's dangerous. I think we're in an era of single issue politics. We're in an era of identity politics, which could take us off on a whole nother path of this discussion, but I am not a single issue political person. I would say to you that I know a lot of people who are so passionate about that issue not because it's a single issue among a whole basket of other issues, but they see it as a life and death issue. And when you take the life of a baby on the date of its birth, one must say, and by the way, 60-some percent of the American people agree with this, we have gone way, way too far with this issue. And so yes, in single-issue political environment that we're in, of all the issues that resonate with a passion, that probably is at the top of the list for a lot of people.
I want to make sure that I get to this. The IBJ printed a letter from David Cardin, a retired U.S. ambassador to the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Full disclosure, he was an Obama appointee, but he wrote about the many claims made about Trump's economy. He offers some numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and he said 150,600 jobs were created in Indiana under Obama-Biden, twice the 80,100 jobs created under Trump. Of course, there's some discrepancy there. It's not twice, but it's close. And the 30,000 manufacturing jobs created by the Obama-Biden administration from 2014 to 2016 were almost five times the 6,800 manufacturing jobs created under Trump pre-pandemic. So, Ed, we hear a lot about job growth under the president, but these figures presented by David Cardin suggest otherwise, at least where Indiana's concerned. How do you respond to that?
Well, I guess that I respond by saying that I think it is irrefutable that when the president came to power, our economy was struggling. He passed tax reduction. He reduced federal regulations. He challenged our allies, by the way, to pay their fair share. We talked about that a moment ago. He's taken on Big Pharma. He renegotiated trade agreements to take advantage were taking advantage of us in other parts of the world. He strengthened our economy. He brought jobs. He brought manufacturing back from overseas with these tax reductions, incentives to bring companies back. If we raise corporate taxes, as Biden, Vice President Biden says he will do, these corporate entities, they know how to deal with this. They're gonna take their operations overseas again. We're gonna go back. We're gonna spin backwards on the economy. So I think that one of the strengths And again, the polls certainly indicate this. They might not give Trump a lot of credit in a lot of areas, but they do indicate that the people feel that he's strong on the economy. And I think that's one of his great strengths, and I think that's something we need going forward.
I want to put one more figure in front of you before we close, and you'll have about 30 seconds to answer. My apologies. So David Cardin goes on to say, the story is the same regarding real wage gains. From 2014 to 2016, the average Hoosier household had an increase in wages of $10,022 under Trump. Hoosier saw an increase of only $3,712 pre-pandemic. Do you dispute those numbers?
I don't have any grounds to specifically dispute those numbers. If I had, I guess if I had had them available to me, I might, I might have done some additional research on them. I don't dispute them. No.
So it's hard to argue with numbers, but we will have a discussion when we come back with both you and former Lieutenant Governor John Mutz. Ed Simcox is a former Indiana Secretary of State and a former Secretary of the Indiana Republican Party. He responded to a takedown of the president written by fellow Republican and former Lieutenant Governor John Mutz, who will be joined by next to talk with Ed Simcox and have a discussion about the president and whether or not Indiana should support him as we did in 2016. We welcome your thoughts. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're discussing the case for and against the president with two prominent Indiana Republicans. John Mutz is a former lieutenant governor and wrote a column critical of President Trump that appeared in the September 25th edition of the Indianapolis Business Journal. Ed Simcox is a former Indiana Secretary of State and, along with three former Indiana GOP chairmen, wrote a response to John Mutz's column in support of the president. They both join me now, and we invite you to participate as well. We would especially like to hear from Republicans, whether you support or oppose the president. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana and leave a comment or question there, or record a short voicemail at 866-476-3881, and we'll do our best to get it on the air. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Ed Simcox, I'm going to start with you. We've been asking some tough questions this hour of both you and John Mutz, and I appreciate your thoughtful responses. It's nice to have a challenging but civil discussion on the state of things, but I'm going to give you the floor to start with here. Why should Indiana support the president 1 week from today?
Well, let me, Matt, kind of rise above the issues of foreign policy and what he's done in the Middle East and the economy and some of the things we've been talking about. There's something very consequential going on in the country today, and it transcends specific policy issues. I think this election is going to decide whether we're all Americans, just Americans, not hyphenated Americans, or whether we're a nation of identity politics where, multiculturalism, which has taken over the Democratic Party, I don't think in Indiana, but I think nationally, whether that will control. Trump has a lot of faults. I cringe at times by what he says and what he tweets. I wouldn't do it that way. He's his own worst enemy sometimes. He's a braggart. He could be vengeful with his adversaries and with the media, of course, that pound on him every single day and have since he announced his candidacy and haven't let up in one day. But he might not be my choice for president in all times, but he is the right man at this time. He's tough. He refuses to wallow in America's past sins, and there are many, which are undeniable. But he wants to move forward. He has courage. He has common sense. And he has unlimited confidence in America. He came in not as a traditional Republican, not as a conservative Republican, a Reaganite, and so forth, like I was at one time and still am. He came in as a populist. He's a patriot. He loves America. That just feels good to me right now. And he puts America first at all times and at all things. And I just think that's hard to argue with. And that's why he believes that America he believes that he wants what's best for America, and he believes that we can get there, and he believes that he can bring us there. And so those are the kinds of things that get me up and say, yeah, I'm going to vote for Trump, and I'm energized. I think he is the right, and I want to again say to you, I think he's the right president for this moment in our history.
John Mutz, I'll give you a chance to respond to Ed Simcox.
Okay.
John, what do you think of that?
Well, I would start by saying that Donald Trump is not fit to be president of the United States and maybe not fit to run a number of organizations in this country. He has lied continually to the American public. He deceived the public about the severity of the COVID crisis. He does not admit mistakes. He has surrounded himself, in many cases, with some questionable individuals. I think of Michael Cohen, who is his admitted fixer. That is, he's there to fix indiscretions that have occurred in Donald Trump's life. Those sort of things really bother me. But the worst thing that bothers me is that he is not a unifier of this country. His policies, his approach, his language, the things he says divide the country. And of all the things that we need right now, I believe more than anything else is more of a common purpose. Will Joe Biden be able to achieve that? I don't know. I think he has a better chance than Donald Trump was and does, and that's why I have made the decision I've made. The other thing that bothers me about the division is that he invokes racism in his remarks and in his campaign and in his approach. And that bothers me a great deal. We Republicans cannot expect to be leaders of this country unless we are inclusive. And the fact of the matter is that Donald Trump is not inclusive.
John, I want to have Ed respond to your comments of racism, but having read your piece, I want to stay with you. It isn't so much about Trump's competitor, Joe Biden, or his policies. It's about a lot of your pieces about Trump himself. And some Republicans embrace and enjoy that personality. Many seem to look past it on purpose. Ed, I don't want to put words in your mouth. It seems like you might be in that camp. John Mutz, why can't you look past that personality and at instead the policies?
Because I think if given four more years of unrestrained possibilities in the president's office, given all the power that we have given that office, it could very well be harmful to our constitutional system of government and could very well lead us in a direction of authoritarian control and rule rather than a system of laws.
And so, Ed Simcox, let's get your response on the racism that John Mutz is talking about. There have been a number of moments that have been questionable where President Trump has said or not said things that maybe he was being expected to say. And you said so yourself just a moment ago about some of the cringeworthy things that that you've heard from the president. How do you respond to some of that?
Well, he is not a racist. He is not a racist. I don't see that. I don't hear it. I don't feel it from him. I'm sensitive to that. He's someone who has reached out and tried to make some inroads. The Republican Party has never done well in the African-American community. 8%, 10%, 12% of the vote, maybe. Lugar might have gotten as mayor up to, I don't know, 30% or 40%, something maybe even better than that. But traditionally, you know, as I look around, the people that I remember running for office, they haven't done well. It's a tough thing. More needs to be done. We need to be more inclusive, no question about that. We need to be appreciative of what we can do to bring that into a better situation for this party. This president is trying to do that. He cites the economics of it. He says he's done a lot for the African-American community. He said it in the last debate. I believe him. I think he has. I don't think he sees America in terms of black, white, again, victim, oppressor, all this identity politics kind of things. He rejects that. I think he sees Americans as Americans. I think that's his vision, and I'm fine with that. And that's the way I see it. That, you know, I've thought a lot about the Black Lives Matter movement. Black Lives Matter as a slogan is important. Of course, Black Lives Matter. The Black Lives Matter organization is a Marxist organization. And the whole idea of systemic racism takes us off on another path. He didn't raise it. Biden raises it. And by the way, you know, John's going to vote for Vice President Biden. Vice President Biden has some, I have some serious concerns about his being able to handle this position. Yesterday, in an interview, he referred to Donald Trump as George twice and then corrected himself. He was running against George, I guess George Bush. I don't know. He didn't. I don't think I heard the last name. But it was George. Will he be the moderate Democrat that John says he is and that I agree with? Will he be that, or will he be captive to a radical wing of his party? I think that's a valid concern. I don't think it matters so much what Joe is. I think it matters about the people that surround him.
Well, you mentioned some of the Democratic platform and Joe Biden perhaps being beholden to this new radical Democratic platform, as you somewhat put it. I'm not quoting there or anything, but it seems that the Republican platform has changed dramatically under President Trump, so that some you might say traditional Republicans, some of the Republicans I'm talking about have, of course, opposed the president on a number of occasions. Do you see that change in the Republican Party as sort of being parallel or comparative to what has happened in the Democratic Party?
Well, I don't. Matt, I see the Republican, I can't speak to the platform. I don't have it sitting in front of me here. I've read it, but it's been a while. But I see his declaration of policy as being, it's America first. A lot of people don't like that. Yeah, it's love America, not hate America. A lot of people don't agree with that. Yeah, it's not wallowing in the past. It's trying to move forward with these issues. I think all of that is laudable, and closing down of fossil fuels, in my view, by the date that he has set, will raise energy rates and the cost of fuel for automobiles and homes and everything else exponentially. I don't think he can get there. I truthfully don't think that he believes that he should get there. But I think that's what the certain elements of his party are telling him, and that's where he's moving, and that's what bothers me about his candidacy.
I have a voicemail I want to get to, but before we do, John Mutz, I want to give you a chance to respond to some of the things that Ed Simcox has been talking about. Is there anything that has that he's said so far that has raised a flag or two in your mind?
Well, The issue of energy, for example, Biden said, and he's correct, that we are in a period of transition. We are moving away from fossil fuels to other optional ways of producing the energy we need. And that is a sensible policy. I think in regard to the racial questions, when a candidate for president says, as he did the other night at the debate, I am the most least biased against African-American people of all the people in this room. He said, of course, he couldn't see the people in the room because it was too dark. But then he said, and I've done more for African-Americans than anybody since Abraham Lincoln. That is just ridiculous. I mean, the Civil Rights Act under Lyndon Johnson did nothing for the African-American community. And of course, the major things that have happened have to do with the private sector. But anyway, having said all that, he's a person who I don't believe has the temperament to properly be the president of the United States and to bring us all together.
We have a listener voicemail from Tim who has a question for Ed Simcox. Let's listen to that now.
Hi, this is Tim. I'm calling from Noblesville, and I've got a question for Ed Simcox, and I would like to ask him to name when Joe Biden said that he would support the idea of taking a baby's life the day before it's born. Thanks.
Ed, so the listener's referencing what you said earlier about the Democratic Party's stance on late-term abortion. Do you have evidence that Joe Biden holds those specific views?
Well, yeah, I guess I do. He's mentioned it in the first debate. They don't call it late-term abortion, of course. They use other euphemisms. Women's health, the Democrat Party platform references it. All of his supporters have referenced it. The vice presidential candidate has referenced it. So late-term abortion is a settled issue among Democrats. There isn't room for debate. They would run you out of the party if you want to debate that issue on the national level. I'm not talking about Indiana here. I'm not talking about my friends in the Democrat Party in Indiana, but I'm talking about what's happened to their party platform on the national basis.
I think some of the reasoning for that, though, is based on technicalities, that some procedures are labeled abortions when, in fact, they are necessary for the health of the mother and may not – the death of the child may not be what the parent wants, but ends up being a consequence of circumstance. How do you respond to that? Because I think that that might be where the defense comes from for so-called late-term abortions.
Well, I understand that that might be the case in some instances. That is clearly the exception to the rule. What the party now stands for is unfettered, unrestricted, without caveat, abortion up to, and the state legislature in the state of New York last year passed a bill to make this available. And it was cheered when it passed on the floor of the House and the Senate in New York State. The cheers went up to allow abortions without qualification up to the date of birth of a child.
John Mutz, we have just a minute left, and I wish we had more time. This has been a good discussion so far today, but I'm going to give you the last word. And I guess, why is it that you think, once again, without repeating too much, why is it that you think that Donald Trump should not be president from a Republican point of view?
Because he has the possibility of leading the party to defeat in this campaign, which is certainly what the polls say.
The entire party?
Well, I'm talking about the party as representative across the country. In Indiana, I'm going to vote for our governor. He's a Republican. It isn't going to affect Indiana's other offices. I'm only saying that Trump is unfit to be president.
I want to thank both of our guests today for a civil discussion, which is often absent from today's discourse, and I appreciate it very much. So Ed Simcox is a former Indiana Secretary of State and former Secretary of the Indiana GOP. Ed, thanks for your viewpoint today.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you,
John. John Mutz is a former Lieutenant Governor. John, thank you for yours and your time.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate you putting the program together.
And a big thanks to the Indianapolis Business Journal for helping us out with today's discussion. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow, an encore presentation of our show on the race for Indiana Attorney General. We'll hear extended interviews with each candidate. That's a race to watch a week from today. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.